Good morning. I'm Kurt Anderson, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Thank you for letting me keep Brian's seat warm for the day. We start today with the presidential election. Seems like when it's all over, we may look back to the beginning of April as the moment when the major battles of the election came into clear focus. Supreme Court arguments over the Affordable Care Act brought health care reform back to the forefront of the national conversation, and the Romney versus Obama race now seems even more inevitable. While everybody was speculating about Justice Kennedy's feelings during the Supreme Court oral arguments, the Romney campaign racked up a whole bunch of endorsements on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, a real come-to-Jesus, get-serious moment for the GOP establishment. So with 7 months left before Romney versus Obama and the main issues at stake coming into pretty sharp relief, we welcome Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick and Politico correspondent Juana Summers, who is currently on the road with the Rick Santorum campaign. Santorum looks at this point a little bit like one of the Walking Dead, but over the weekend he vowed to go all the way to the convention if need be. Todd, Juana, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Kirk. Good morning.
Hey, thank you.
So, Todd, let's start with the arguments over health care as they came down last week in the Supreme Court. There are those who say that if the court strikes down the individual mandate and perhaps the whole act, it'll help Obama politically because it'll galvanize the base who will be angry at conservative judicial activism. And then there are those who say, no way. It's his signature legislation. If it's struck down, he's in trouble. What is Washington? What are Washington insiders making of this calculus lately?
Well, I think it makes an interesting story because it's kind of counterintuitive think to say, well, if the individual mandate is ripped out of the Affordable Care Act or if the entire thing should fall, it's actually good for President Obama. No serious political planner, especially on the Democratic side, that you talk to, unless they're really trying to spin the best of the worst case scenario,
yeah,
really believes that. This is, you said it there in the question, this is President Obama's signature domestic achievement for all of the controversy achieved at major expenditure of political capital. What they're really counting on, which is in the hands of the Supreme Court now, is that most of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act have not yet been realized. Now, you hear the president running around and other Democrats running around highlighting the things that are already in place that people like. You know, you can stay on insurance up until 26. Children can't be denied for pre-existing conditions. There are new Medicare benefits, including closing the prescription drug donut hole, the gap in coverage, that are already starting to come into effect. But I think what Democrats realize, and frankly, Republicans realize this too, they have a lot of principled arguments against Obamacare, and you take them on their face. But here's one thing that everybody does know inside Washington, that this Supreme Court case is really the last best chance to undo the Affordable Care Act. Republicans say, regardless of what the Supreme Court rules, we will never stop trying to repeal it. There's no sign that there will be any political consensus after this election unless President Obama is roundly trounced, to repeal Obamacare. And what everybody knows is that whatever else you think about this thing, it's an entitlement. It has a lot of subsidies for people to get health insurance, regardless of the mandate, and that once it's in place, people will like it. People will become used to it, like Social Security and Medicare, which were controversial at their time, in their own time, and that once the entitlement's in place, it will be impossible to wrest it from the hands of voters. That's why people are trying so very hard right now to prevent what could be a $1 trillion entitlement from going into effect.
Well, and if it's struck down by the court in June, right at the start of the you know, campaign into November, though, and we have stories of 24-year-olds being taken off their parents' health insurance plans and stories of people being denied coverage for pre-existing conditions. Arguably, won't that serve the interests of the administration?
Sure, it could, and those things would get people very riled up, and the president would come with a populist message saying, you know, we can't let Republicans kick people off of their insurance or let them kick children off their insurance. Sure, they would make the best of it. But they would also be fighting against the notion that's very popular on the right, which is that the president is so out of touch with the constitutional ideals and of the country that this giant monstrosity that he rammed through Congress can't even pass constitutional muster. And that would look terrible as well. Sure, they would get a lot of good talking points and speeches out of having people kicked off their insurance, but I don't know that it makes up for, frankly, the embarrassment or the loss of political capital for having your signature domestic achievement struck down by the court.
And listeners, if this is indeed the moment during which both parties are starting to define the ground on which the election in November is going to be fought, where do you want your party to be? Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, call in with the two issues that you want your party to ride in November. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You play political consultant. What do you want to make the 2012 election about? We're going to reserve some lines for people from each party, so call now, 212-433-9692, or post on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. So, Todd, if the health care law is struck down, will Congress respond in any meaningful, more than soundbite way in trying to reinstate the great provisions? I mean, will it just die away and the Democrats will want to make it not an issue they talk about?
Oh, I think they'll have to talk about it because the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, has permeated the American political culture, and even people who don't follow politics closely, Kurt, have an opinion on it. Think they know something about it. Some people do. Many people don't know facts on it, but everybody has an opinion about Obamacare. Will Congress do something in a meaningful way before the election? I don't know that Congress is really poised to do much of anything meaningful between now and the election. Now, after the election, in a lame duck session, there's going to be a great deal of meaningful legislation on taxes and debt. There's a lot that have to get done. The Bush tax cuts are expiring. It's going to be a zoo on Capitol Hill. Would healthcare be part of that? It would be a tough one to wedge in there. And with still a divided Congress before next January, when the results of the election take place, it's hard to imagine the Congress that I know and the Congress that I spend all my time with, hard to imagine them coming up with any meaningful fixes. That would be a post-election, you know, claiming of a political mandate. Once the Supreme Court has ruled, a Republican win or a Democratic win in the White House or on Capitol Hill, those people would claim a mandate. Okay, the Supreme Court has spoken, the voters have spoken, now we must find a solution to our healthcare problem. There is consensus on one thing: the system's a mess. Nobody will stipulate that it's working the way it should. Voters don't believe that. The parties have drastically different visions of how to fix health care. So they would have to claim a mandate and go forward from there. We'd be back to square one, really. We'd be back to square one.
And Juana, obviously Congress may not do anything. The Democrats may kind of keep the conversation on the down low, at least until the Supreme Court decides. But what about Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum and the Republicans running for the nomination, and the Republicans generally? How are they going to talk about health care, Obamacare, as they call it, between now and summer, and react to a Supreme Court decision?
Sure. And I mean, if you're looking at Rick Santorum, if you'll remember on Monday, the first day of oral arguments over the federal health care law, he appeared and spoke to reporters, brought his campaign actually to Washington, D.C., where he's not on the ballot, to go outside of the Supreme Court and blast his rival Mitt Romney over the issue, saying that we need to appeal, I believe the term was, Romney-Obamacare. So he's been linking the two together for some time. For Rick Santorum, who I travel with, he has said that the federal health care law is the singular issue that brought him into the race for the Republican nomination. So I think that as this continues in reaction to a Supreme Court decision, you can expect to see very strong rhetoric, as always, from him on this issue. And depending on what the decision is there about the health care law, I'd expect him to use that as a new way or a new point on his attacks of Romney. Now, obviously, for Mitt Romney, this is a very delicate dance because it leaves him open to some room for attack given the Massachusetts health care law, which I think has always been sort of an albatross for him. But he said, you know, no doubt, of course, we'll repeal it. That said, that health care argument has not been as big of a part of his stump speech, if you're just looking at those two who are obviously at the forefront of the race for the nomination.
Although I guess if the Supreme Court does indeed strike down the federal law and that decision, as I understand it, would not invalidate the Massachusetts health care law and the mandate, he could then make the argument, look, I said Massachusetts was great. It's the federal law that's bad.
And I think that's exactly the argument that you're likely to hear from the Romney campaign, if that's the way that the decision goes. And it's kind of what he said now. You know, I supported this at a state level. It's not what's right for the federal level.
I ask both of you out of curiosity, since I don't know what is usual in Supreme Court processes. I read that the nine justices voted internally last Friday, a day or two after the arguments were done on this case, basically. But they'll keep it secret. Is this just an internal straw poll that they always do, or have they just decided and now they have to write the decisions?
Well, the inner workings of how the court actually decides is really, really murky. But it is common for justices to decide very quickly after oral arguments. The whole rest of the time comes because they have to write the briefs. There is also a great deal of once they know sort of what the vote is going to be, 5-4, 6-3 in this case, it'd probably be one of those unless we get a big surprise. Then the briefs are crafted, and there's a lot of politicking between the justices to try to adjust the language of the decision to get different justices to sign on. I'm going to vote with the majority, but I can't sign on to this decision until you word it in a certain way. And there's a lot of that goes on. So there are nine people in Washington and probably their clerks who know the way this thing is going to go. But it is more complicated than just the vote, because the precedent is important where Congress and the administration can go from here in terms of trying to get people into an insurance pool, which is the whole point of trying to drive down premiums so that more people can have insurance. Where can they go from here? What would be constitutional? What would the court tolerate in future cases? And it's not just health care. Lots of issues of congressional power under the Commerce Clause to regulate interstate commerce, all these sort of broader constitutional issues will all likely be contained in the several decisions that we get here. So that's why it takes so long to craft. The ramifications go far beyond Obamacare here.
I find it amazing that in this day and age and in Washington, D.C., a secret can be kept of that magnitude for two or three months.
The walls are thick.
Well, there you go. We're going to take a call from David in my former home county of Putnam County. David, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you on. What do you have to say about this healthcare question
we
are facing?
The question, as it was posed, was what do I want to see the party's main platform be? I'm a registered Republican, although I really just registered Republican so I can vote in the primary. I'm only slightly more in agreement with the Republicans than the Democrats. But what I would like to see both parties promote is or have at the core of their platform a return to constitutional government. As I see it, you know, we shouldn't even be having this debate about health care. It is so blatantly not a power vested in the federal government, nor is Medicare, nor is Social Security, nor is corporate welfare. All of these things are just not the role of the federal government. And I would like to see both parties say, you know what, we need to obey the Constitution.
Thank you, David. I don't think certainly members of the Democratic Party are going to say that probably going to take the position that Social Security is unconstitutional, but maybe some honest Republicans will. I want to go now to Danny from Princeton. Hi, Danny.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I am also a registered Republican. I don't always vote with them because I don't like their whole war on secularism in this country. Why can't the politics be about politics and not religion? And the other issue, which is probably related, is their war on science right now. It drives me nuts. I'm a biologist at Princeton, and I don't understand why science can't dictate science policy. Why does it have to be political?
Well, thank you. To the extent that the anti-science positions of some Republicans and the anti-secularism, does that push you, has that brought you close to saying, I'm never going to call myself a Republican again, or are you still clinging on?
I call myself more a libertarian than Republican, if anything.
Uh-huh.
But I still would like, I like their ideals fundamentally. I like a smaller government. I like personal responsibility. I just really don't understand the whole religious touting.
I understand. Thank you for calling, Danny. We're going to take a call now from one of your Princeton neighbors. Rosemary, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Well, I guess number one, I would say I would love one of the parties to take up the issue of getting money out of politics. We need to have publicly funded elections and mandate that a high percentage of the electorate must vote and make that easy for people. And there should be a paper trail, which leads me to position two, which is that this whole circus over the health care debate is really, we should stop calling it Obamacare or Romneycare, especially in the case of Obamacare, because this is legislation that was crafted by the insurance companies. It is not, does not reflect the will or wish of the people. We have the worst outcomes. We spend the most money, and every civilized country in the world has a national health care system. And I would think that these two intercommingled things would go a long way to solving a lot of problems.
Thank you, Rosemary. Juana, back to the politics of the moment. Romney got two more endorsements in the last days. Former President George H.W. Bush, his son, former Governor of Florida Jeb Bush. But George W. Bush hasn't yet made that endorsement. Should we read anything into that, either on the part of George W. Bush having his doubts or the Romney campaign not wanting a George W. Bush endorsement?
You know, I really wouldn't read much into it. Obviously, as we've all seen over the last couple of days, there have been a significant number of endorsements coming down the pipeline from very top-tier mainstream Republicans and even folks who aren't coming out and endorsing Mitt Romney are saying, you know, it's looking more and more likely that he's going to be the nominee. Obviously, George W. Bush's lack of endorsements underscore with both his father and his brother backing Mitt Romney, but I wouldn't really read too much into it. I mean, spokesmen have told us that he doesn't have any plans to endorse right now, that he's kind of like, you know, sitting back and enjoying life, that this isn't a fray he really wants to step into.
And they probably, at this point, if we assume, as might be a mistake, that this is just a mopping up time now for the Romney campaign. Tomorrow there are primaries in Washington, D.C., in Maryland, and Wisconsin, with Wisconsin being the big one. And where Romney has been endorsed by Representative Paul Ryan and the governor of Wisconsin, or the senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, who are both certainly solidly on the right of their party. Are those important endorsements, or is the momentum just going to Romney in Wisconsin anyway?
You know, I do think it is important given the level of energy around those particular figures, particularly if you're looking at Wisconsin. I've been in the state for about a week now, and if you're looking at, say, in Rick Santorum rallies, I honestly think I might see more signs for Johnson and Scott Walker than I do for Santorum at some of these events in these small parts of the state. So I do think that those are important. That said, the Santorum camp's obviously brushing that off, saying, you know, we don't spend our time courting endorsements. We're not the endorsement candidate, and that this piling on of endorsements in the last couple of days is simply the sign of an establishment running scared and really concerned. And they're saying it is a good thing. But I do think there is some importance to it, and particularly if you're looking at there are a large number of delegates. It's at stake in Tuesday's contest in Maryland, District of Columbia, and Wisconsin. And so I think you really have to keep that in mind, too, because if Mitt Romney is able to take wins in all three of those, which are winner-take-all states, that puts him hugely ahead in the delegate count needed to win the party's nomination.
So good news for Mitt Romney is he's probably cruising to effectively wrapping up the nomination. Bad news for Mitt Romney is about... I read in this new couple of Gallup polls that just came out this morning, especially the one in the survey of swing states, voters in swing states saying, would you vote for Obama or Romney in November? President Obama is now ahead among registered voters by 51% to 42%. And this is just weeks, really, after in the same poll, Gallup, the president had trailed Governor Romney by 2 percentage points. And I noticed also in that poll, when you drill down a little deeper, that there's this enormous gender gap, this 19-point gender gap, between, which is to say women far more numerously supporting the president than men. Polls come and go, but it is the Gallup poll, and it is a striking shift. What do you guys make of this?
Well, you did say it is just one poll, and you have to take any individual poll with not a grain of salt, but look at the trend lines. That's the more important thing. Whenever you see wide swings in polls in a very short time, I get skeptical of the real validity. You want to look at the trends. The trend, however, for President Obama against Mitt Romney right now is very positive. That gender gap is astounding. What do you attribute that to? What the Democrats are fond of calling the war on women, the battle that Republicans largely chose over contraception or women's health or religious liberty, however you want to view it, seems to have cut decisively for Democrats broadly. It's not the only issue. Democrats believe also that the more they talk about those positive aspects of the Affordable Care Act, the ones they see as positive, frankly, the ones that a lot of moderates and independents see as positive, that we talked about before, health insurance benefits, closing the Medicare prescription donut hole, having your kids on your insurance, those issues have been cutting very well for Democrats, too. It's why they're harping on it. It's why they're harping on those kitchen table economic health care issues, regardless of how the Supreme Court rules or anything else. They think electorally it cuts for them as well. And Democrats will attribute part of that gender gap to that as well. The other thing is, let's just be honest. Polls have proven in the past women voters, by and large, they really like Barack Obama and they love his wife. Well, they like him and they love her.
And it seems, though, I mean, just again, not to give too much meaning to this one poll, but the fact that it changed so dramatically among women and women under 50 in the last month or so makes you think as that the debate around and discussion around reproductive rights and the rest has moved that needle. I read a Romney campaign spokesman saying, oh, no, it's not a gender gap against Mitt Romney. It's a gender gap in general for Republicans. Juana, is that the line that they're going to be taking? It's not me. It's not the governor. It's just Republicans in general.
You know, it's really interesting because at a campaign event yesterday, Mitt Romney was actually asked about how he plans to persuade women voters, given some of the issues, I think the contraception flap and others that have been prominent in the news of late. And I believe, paraphrasing what he said, is that it's very important to take the message to women so that women understand how we're going to get them good jobs and provide them a good economic future for them and their families. And I believe the term was to end the distortions that Democrats have been pushing. So I think that's what you'll hear. He's also, the campaign has been using Ann Romney a lot to humanize the former governor to female voters. So I would expect to see that if this trend line continues. I believe it was also repeated in a USA Today poll that was out on Sunday. I would expect to see her to play that role in a much more increased fashion if this gender issue does become more prevalent.
Juana Summers is national political correspondent for Politico. Todd Zwillick is the Takeaways Washington correspondent. Todd, Juana, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Kurt. Pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Kurt Anderson in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Coming up after the break, a call in for you to tell us what you would have done if you'd won the lottery. And we want to know about the most selfish thing you'd do with all those tens, hundreds of millions of dollars. and the most selfless thing you do, the most selfish and the most selfless. You can start calling now, 212-433-WNYC. We'll be back after the break.